Hey guys, here's another set of 5 years later by Amory. Today we're doing chapter 12 and 13. Chapter 12, A Christmas Carol. Annie had responded to the collapse of her relationship with Paul by canceling the holiday time she'd booked over Christmas and working nonstop on reviewing the evidence of the case that still seemed no closer to being resolved than it had in August. It was either that or analyze the confusing mess her life had become, and that was the road to despair. She didn't want to think about what she could possibly say to Jeff. We never did anything wrong. At least if we had, maybe I would have something other than pain to think about. It's not fair. So, not thinking only fought the thoughts out stronger. So instead of spending time on what she couldn't control, she did what she did best and focused on what she could, and threw herself into her work. She knew she had to face the situation someday, and not facing it looked very attractive at the moment. Annie? Her new flatmate was trying to catch her eye. She looks amazing, Annie thought, with a certain distracted envy. She hadn't spent much time socializing with Attell's cousin, but she'd got the impression of a lively, thoroughly westernized girl who enjoyed jeans, tight t-shirts, and partying. Today, however, she was dressed traditionally in a green and gold salwar kameez, with the only concession to western style being a pair of silver high-heeled sandals. Are you going out anywhere? Annie asked. Yes, and you're coming, the younger woman replied. What? My grandparents are hosting a family gathering, and Attell made it very clear it would be unacceptable for me to arrive without you in tow. He also said I wasn't allowed to give you enough warning to come up with an excuse. I'm sorry, but Shakti didn't let her finish. And Attell also said that you tried that I'm Jewish, I don't celebrate Christmas line, you were to be told to remember who exactly is inviting you. Shakti didn't... Oh, wait. Annie had indeed been about to say that. It had always worked before when she wanted to be alone over the holiday, after all. So she suddenly found herself reduced to silence. Shakti didn't seem to notice as she carried on talking. It's simply a day when most stores and workplaces are closed for us. And so, a good day to have a family get-together, she finished. Annie looked at the pile of notes she'd been resigned to spending the day reading. She sighed and put them in her briefcase. Let me go get changed. You've got 20 minutes, and then I'm dragging you to the car, even if you're still in your underwear. That'd make me the topic of conversation again, Annie thought wryly as she went to her room.
The banging on the door was even louder than the banging in Jeff's head. Ever since he got back from Norfolk, he had fallen into an increasingly self-destructive pattern. He would go over the events of the party in his head, and find himself swinging wildly between imagining that Annie accepting his hug as she cried herself out and promising to dog men they were going to be okay, and imagining that the way she said goodbye and walked out the room meant that she had finally decided to cut him out of her life for good. Eventually, the thoughts would get too dark, and he would attempt to drown them down in scotch. As day followed day, and he heard nothing, the positive thoughts got shorter and weaker, and the negative ones got longer and stronger, and the scotch consumption heavier and heavier, until on Christmas Eve, he had gone on a truly vicious bender and passed out on his couch, never making it to the bed.
Open up, Winger. I know you're in there.
Britta? What the hell? It's... He checked his phone. 11 a.m. He groaned, impaled himself off the couch, and shambled over to the door. Why do you care, Britta?
You're supposed to be spending Christmas with us, Jeff. Remember? You were supposed to be at my place an hour ago.
Jeff vaguely remembered discussing plans on the last day of fall semester, and a couple of times since, and accepting to give him an excuse not to trek over to his mother's place. But he really wasn't in the mood for company. Britta, the last thing I want right now is a vegetarian atheist Christmas.
Fine, Jeff, Britta snapped back, but on one condition. Jeff stared at his blonde friend with hungover cynicism. You tell Taylor why her uncle Jeff doesn't want to spend Christmas with her.
It's got nothing to do with, Jeff attempted to answer, but stopped as Britta ushered Taylor into view from where she was hiding behind her mother's legs, looking adorable in a child's Christmas elf dress, but apparently with tears on the verge of sprouting out of her bright blue eyes as she listened to the conversation. Jeff attempted to open his mouth, but stopped. This is unfair, Britta, he eventually said. She just grinned at him. Fine, Jeff snapped back. Give me 20 minutes to get showered and changed.
Yay! Taylor was bouncing with happiness. Annie felt overwhelmed by the chaos in Natalie's grandparents' house. He had taken her off Shakti's hands shortly after they'd arrived and shown her around, but there must have been at least 30 people there in what was not an exceptionally large house. She had tried to remember as many names as possible, but even her attention to detail could not keep up with the barrage of information, and she had sought a refuge in a side room where the children were being entertained watching Christmas movies. Annie settled down to watch Shrek for the umpteenth time. It still brought her a smile. It still brought a smile to her face. Ah, thought I saw you come in here. Shakti slumped against the wall next to Annie with a weary smile. Annie smiled back. You seem stressed. It was my turn to talk to Daddy G. Grandmother, she added when she remembered who she was talking to. Annie remembered being introduced to a tiny, round lady in at least her 70s, marshalling a swarm of daughters-in-law with terrifying efficiency around the kitchen and producing some amazing smells in the process. And it was exactly the same as every other conversation we've had. Oh, Shakti, the other girl was now putting on the shaky voice of an old woman. You're looking beautiful today. How is work? Still not married? My friend's grandson is still single, you know? But you're only, what, 25? Annie said. Exactly. When Grandma was my age, she was already married and pregnant with her second child, as she is always reminding me. Annie smiled. Jewish grandmothers are similar. See? I knew you'd understand. The other girl smiled back. Family, eh? They drive you nuts, but you can't do without them. Yeah. Family, Annie said thoughtfully as her new friend relaxed and started watching the film. The mention of family reminded Annie of something she'd almost forgotten to do, and she took out her phone and began typing a text. 2. Friends, all. Message. Merry Christmas, everyone. Love, Annie.
Jeff was sitting in Britta's car as he pulled up to Duncan's house when his phone vibrated. The initial surge of hope when he saw who it was from dissipated when he realized it was a group message, but he took what consolation he could from the thought that at least she hadn't deleted him from her friends list. She can hardly object to me replying in the same vein, he thought. Reply all. Message. And to you, Annie. And to everyone. Love, Jeff.
Winger!
Glad you could make it. I was practically drowning in an ostrich in here without another man to share the burden. The door to the house had been flung open, and Ian Duncan walked up. That was uncalled for, Craig sniffed as he followed out. Bollocks, said Duncan cheerfully. That objection would be more compelling if you weren't wearing a Miss Sansa mini dress. It was all the star half chaps, Craig sniffed. And I couldn't wear trousers over this cast anyway, he pointed to his broken leg.
Jeff set his aloes, expertly dodged Craig's attempt to hug one-armed, then caught him as his crutch slipped and he lost balance and ended up holding him anyway.
Thank you, Jeffrey. You're so strong. Craig was flushing. Jeff dismissed his attempts to hold on and stepped inside the house. When did you get there? He asked Duncan. Day before yesterday, my dear mother was lying about being at death's door. As soon as the doctor said she was good for another 6 months, I hopped a flight back here. That sucks. Jeff honestly had no idea what the appropriate response was. Cheers, old boy. Drinky. Damn shame about affair with SM, by way. Make it a large score. Neat, Jeff said.
Jeff hadn't wanted to do Christmas. All he had wanted to do was sleep off the previous night's hangover before working up sufficient self-pity and regret to start working on the next one. Instead, he found himself eating his fill of Britta's vegetarian Christmas dinner, which he reluctantly admitted was actually edible. Playing silly games with Taylor, she was still only four, but already had a knack of making him do what she wanted. That was second only to Annie at the height of her powers. A fact which Britta was not above abusing, and watching stuff on TV which he would never have dreamed of watching otherwise.
What's that flag, and why is it bandling my country tis of thee? Yes, after Duncan had synced his tablet and hit play. It's the royal standard, and God save the queen, you ignorant colonial. Duncan's accent had somehow gotten even more British. Watch in awe as you learn how Christmas is observed in civilized realms. Hey! He was pelted with balls of screwed up wrapping paper before he even finished talking.
It was the end of the day. Taylor had long since gone to bed, and Craig had offered to give Jeff a ride home.
Thanks, Rita. This was actually not awful.
And you weren't quite as much a jerk as usual. She smiled back at him. Then she went serious. Just be patient, okay, Jeff? She will get in touch when she's ready. Just don't climb into a pit and pull it in after you're... Just don't climb into a pit and pull it in after you while you're waiting.
Jeff smiled wanly. We've known each other far too long, Britta. You're starting to read my mind.
Well, it's not as if that's particularly difficult. Scotch, boobs, designer's clothes, more scotch. Covers at least 90% of it. Jeff rolled his eyes at her.
Happy, non-religious midwinter festival, Britta. Jeff said as he hugged his friend.
Merry Christmas, Jeff. Britta said as she hugged him back. Jeff walked over to where Craig was waiting by his small car and waved one last time before climbing in. Come on, let's get you home. Shakti was gently shaking Annie awake from where she'd fallen asleep, in an armchair in front of the TV. She was mortified when she checked her watch and realized she'd slept for at least 4 hours. I'm so sorry. I've been a dreadful guest. And after everyone's so friendly. She had eaten her fill at mealtime. More than that, to be honest, but Shakti's family had laid on a full-on Punjabi banquet and wouldn't hear of moderation. And then retired for what she had meant to be just a short rest. Don't be silly, Shakti replied. We all know you've had a bad time of it recently. And Atel said you'd been working far too hard and needed to rest. We were just happy to help.
The two of them went through a hectic whirlwind of goodbyes as they made their way to the door. Shakti's grandparents wouldn't hear a word of Annie's apologies, insisting that as far as they were concerned, their grandson's partner was part of the family, and demanding a big hug each time before letting her go. Shakti hugged them too, and then the two young women were finally on their way.
You look sad, Annie. Shakti observed while driving the two of them back. Annie sighed. I haven't seen my mother for 12 years, and my father for even longer, and I speak to my brother perhaps twice a year. Days like today remind me that families don't have to be like that, that's all. It's nice, but she trailed off without finishing. My friends are more like family than my actual family are, most of the time, she added after a moment's silence. As if prompted by this thought, she fished out her phone and looked at her messages. She stopped at the one from Jeff, which had been the first reply she'd received. I will speak to you, I promise. But not when I'm hurting so much. We spent too much time hurting each other. I'll get in touch when it's safe to be happy. She sighed and put the phone away. All right. Chapter 13, New Year Resolutions. Hold on. Give me a moment. Trying to. Okay. Ah! It was a couple of days after New Year's Day, and Shakti was not happy. She marched into the apartment, slammed the door shut, kicked her heels off, and threw her purse into the corner of the room. Annie looked up from the file she was reading. Bad date? The worst! Annie awed in sympathy. Aww. As she put the file down. What was wrong with him? Shakti threw herself down on the sofa next to Annie. Nothing. He was perfect. He was good-looking, polite, funny, and seemed to be genuinely happy to be with me. The bastard. Annie looked baffled. I'm not seeing the problem. I only agreed to go out with him this once to shut my grandmother up. Now, I can't see him again or she'll be all like, oh, Shakti, you should listen to your daddy-ji, and she knows what she's talking about. Is that a good enough reason not to see a really good guy, Shakti? The other woman smiled shyly. He was rather nice.
Jeff found himself wondering if his friends had entered into some sort of conspiracy to ensure he had as little time as possible to himself. The day after Christmas, Shirley had called him apologizing for being too busy to talk on Christmas Day and spent almost 2 hours chatting. That same evening, Duncan had breezed by complaining about all the vegetarian food Brida was making him eat. Any more of this and I'll start photosynthesizing, old boy, and demanded Jeff accompanied him to a steakhouse. The following day, Craig begged Jeff to take him to the hospital, citing problems with his cars. Then Frankie called him, asking for him to talk her through a contract she'd been asked to sign. Mel Kellinghan showed turned up on New Year's Eve, insisting on dragging him out the bar and so on. They think they can stop me thinking about Annie, Jeff thought. They think that if they can keep me busy, I wouldn't notice it's been almost 2 weeks since I heard anything more than group emails on Christmas and New Year's Day. What's going on, Britta? He said 3 days after New Year, when the two of them, Dale and Craig, had gone to a coffee bar after watching the latest Disney blockbuster. Duncan had laughed sarcastically at the idea of seeing a Disney movie, where what had doubtless started as some sort of grim North European legend had turned into a musical about a wizard, a girl made of flowers, and a hero striving to win her love. With the usual quota of singing animals, cartoonish violence, and merchandising, Taylor and Craig had loved it.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Jeff. Britta's expression was far too innocent, to be honest, as she pretended to watch Taylor draw flowers on Craig's cast.
I hadn't had more than half a day to myself since Christmas, Jeff replied. Somebody always turns up with some bright idea to annoy me and waste my time.
You can look at it that way if you want, Jeff, Britta said grimly. Or you can look at it as having friends who care enough about you that they're not prepared to allow you to drink yourself to death instead of pulling yourself together. I saw you on Christmas morning, remember? You haven't been that bad for years.
Since the last time she disappeared from my life, he thought to himself. He's probably decided that there's no place for me in her life anymore. After all, it's gone out into the world, and it's changing her for the better while I stay behind, clinging on to Greendale like a safety blanket. It's not as if reconnecting has given her anything other than grief or pain after all. I miss her so much. Thanks, Britta, he said instead. He only tried to ask you out, Annie, but thou was the first one to break. The short silence that had fallen across the open plan floor plate shared with a dozen other officers.
Annie was still shaking with the rage that had overcome her when Jack from the corporate fraud desk had come over and parked himself next to her desk with a slightly too large smile on his face. The smile had soon disappeared as Annie had told him in no uncertain terms just what she thought of his chat-up lines, and he'd fled with his ears ringing. Her head whipped around to face her partner, still with a wild expression in her eyes. She did, however, manage to bite down her first reply and reply calmly. Just because I'm single again doesn't mean I'm desperate. I've got important work to do. I don't need to be distracted by players thinking I'm a soft touch. Jack isn't that sort of guy. He's a nice guy who spends too much time with spreadsheets, who has been helping us to run the financials for months and has probably been working up the nerve to ask me out for weeks. A small voice at the back of Annie's mind said. She could tell by the expression on her partner's face that Attell was probably thinking something similar.
It's not like that, Annie, he said, confirming her thoughts. And besides, we need him to run financial analysis.
Annie sighed. I'll apologize for losing my temper later. But I'm not apologizing for not wanting to go on a date. I wish guys would just get the message that I'm not looking to date anyone yet.
If it wasn't clear before, it is now. Her partner said dryly. Have you talked to your friend in Colorado yet? He added in a softer tone of voice.
What could I possibly say to him? She thought to herself. I'm sorry? I was so pleased to find you still liked, wanted me that I took your friendship, your love, and twisted it into something small and selfish. I was so fixated on thinking I could have everything that I ended up with nothing. You've done a good enough job of fixing your own life that you don't deserve to be sucked back into the dysfunctional mess of mine. I miss you so much. I've just been too busy, she said out loud, cringing inward at how pathetic the answer was. Attell sighed inwardly, but recognized the attempts to avoid personal topics.
What was it you were about to say before we were interrupted?
I may have something, she said. There's a GS-7 in the base commander's office who's been spending above his pay grade. New car, diving holiday in the Bahamas, that sort of thing, with no obvious source of additional income.
Rich parents?
No. If anything, it's the other way around. He seems to be helping them with their mortgage payments.
State lottery?
Not on the official list of winners.
Access?
His section is one of the ones the NCIS report identified as having access to all the known leaks.
Dao asked a few more questions and swore under his breath. Sounds like we need to get to the director for an arrest warrant, he said. This is really good work, Annie. So, what went wrong? Captain Austin, who had come down from D.C. on being told of the arrest, sounded as tired as anyone in the interagency task force. Special Agent, why don't you recap everything we have so far?
It's either a very good sign or a very bad one when Meg addresses me by rank, Annie thought. Before launching into a summary of the past week, the arrest of the suspect, a 30-year-old office worker called Brian Grady, getting him to confess to passing on information for payment to his new girlfriend, who claimed to be a journalist working for a website monitoring government-based, cutting a deal with him whereby he agreed to meet her in exchange for a reduced sentence, only for her not to turn up to the coffee shop rendezvous that Annie and a dozen others from the task force staked out. Except I think she did turn up, Annie said.
Explain. Captain Austin had a "this had better be very good indeed" tone to her voice.
Annie put two pictures on the view screen. These are stills from our surveillance camera, she said. You'll see that in the first one, he's holding his coffee in his left hand. In the second, he's holding it in his right. She paused for effect. He held it left-handed for the first 20 minutes, then switched to the right hand for the next hour and a half. Grady is right-handed. I think he was signaling his contact that he had been compromised and switched back to his usual hand after she was clear.
Damn. Captain Austin hissed.
My partners and a team of FBI agents are examining all the available footage to identify most likely suspect, Annie said. They're also gathering in all security camera footage for a 3-block radius and have contacted local police for dashboard cam footage of the area.
Good work, the other woman said. Keep me informed of progress. The meeting went on for another hour, but covered little pressure.
It was a couple of days later, and Attell was presenting the results of intense analysis of the survey footage. He started out with a full-length picture.
She wore a baggy jacket with the hood pulled over her face, loose trousers, and basketball shoes, he said. Her height is approximately 5 feet 8 inches, and her weight 100 to 120 pounds.
The picture started to zoom in on her face as Atal continued speaking.
Because of the hood, we never got a clear view of her face. However, combining the results of our own surveillance cameras and 17 other security cameras and police cameras, we managed to get partial shots of approximately 60% of her face. Our ID experts used image manipulation software to produce a composite out of these partial images and extrapolated the missing information using protocols specially derived for the purpose. This was fine-tuned further by interviewing the barista who served her to produce these estimates.
A dozen images flashed up on screen with a variety of hair and eye colors. An IT expert explained they had not been able to recover this information. So we're presenting a full range of alternatives. Annie sat up in her seat. She found herself drawn to the image with blonde hair and green eyes. She stood up and walked over to the screen. "Can you make her hair longer and add waves?" she said suddenly.
"Like this?" the IT guy said.
Annie nodded. "I've seen that face before. Now where?" She was almost lost in thought. "Oh god, it can't be." She dived for her tablet, opened up her Facebook app, and with a trembling fingers, searched for what she remembered and swept the picture over the IT guy's laptop. "Can you check that for consistency with your reconstruction?
He banged it at a few keys. "Yes, it's fit. Is it? Who's the guy with her?"
She didn't answer the question. Instead, she turned to Atal. "We need to book a flight to Denver. Tonight, if possible." Annie had not expected her first visit in almost 5 years to the crazy, chaotic, incompetent disaster area she had so loved and called home for 6 years to be on official FBI business. She found herself comparing it with her memories with all the trepidation of an adult visiting a place they'd loved in childhood and expecting it to be a smaller and more mundane than memory recalled. It was the small details she noticed first. The buildings looked like they were properly maintained, almost as though they don't get wrecked by a paintball war every year. The grass in the quad was properly trimmed. The library seemed to be busy with students actually studying. The students she asked for directions to the law department were polite, helpful, and serious. It was Greendale, and yet, it's almost like a normal school now, she thought. Jeff always said that if he couldn't leave, he wanted to make this place worth staying in. Did he do it? Or help Frankie do it anyway? She added with a wry smile. This was where I made my first real friends. Where I first fell in love. Where I had my first real kiss. Where I met a bunch of crazy, infuriating, lazy, hypocritical, wonderful, and caring people who took in a stressed, obsessed ex-junkie with no friends or family and allowed her to believe in herself again. To believe she was somebody who could make a difference. This is the place I turned my back on for 5 years and only connected with again because it came to me.
A penny for them? Atal had noticed she seemed to be elsewhere.
Just memories, she said. This was my home for a long time. There are a lot of them.
I can't imagine. You'd like. Was it? Guy really the dean when you were a student here? They had gone to Craig's office, first as a matter of courtesy to announce their arrival on campus. He had squealed with delight on seeing Annie and envelop her in a big hug, then castling the case over her partner in a way that Annie remembered entirely too well from countless study group sessions. He then detained them for a good 10 minutes reminiscing before giving them directions to the law department.
He's actually mellowed over the years, Annie said with a soft smile. Back then, he would just as likely have been wearing a dress or a nurse's uniform as jacket and slacks.
Atal looked at her in disbelief. I never used to completely believe your stories about how crazy this place was. But after meeting your friends?
Annie smiled again. It was strange, but this place always had a knack for fixing broken people.
You're not worth understanding. I think we're almost here anyway. They arrive at Joseph Hall, which had a sign outside clearly announcing Department of Law. Here, Professor J.T. Winger, ESQBEDJD.
Annie couldn't help a proud smile as she read the sign. They asked for Jeff at the reception desk. The receptionist said he was currently lecturing. They thanked her and wandered through the building to the main lecture theater, where a quick look through the glass panel of the door showed almost 100 students sitting up and paying attention as Jeff strode confidently across the front of the theater. The ego-boosting joy of having a room full of people listening and looking up to him. Annie suddenly remembered their conversation last summer. She looked at her watch. "It'll only be about 10 minutes," she said. "We can wait until then."
And finally, for your homework this week, read chapters 11 to 14 of your course books. There will be a spot test next week. Jeff grinned and the good-natured groaning that greeted this announcement. "Now get out of here," he grinned again as another wave of groaning accompanied the scamping of seats, the shuffling of bags, and the relieved chatter of students.
"Professor?"
"Yes, Haley?" He was surprised to see that she was still here. She was usually one of the first out of the class.
"Do you remember the FBI agent from the conference last year?" Jeff nodded. Around.
"Yes, why?"
"She's in the corridor outside. Are you all right?"
Jeff looked like he was having a heart attack. "Annie? What the hell? I don't hear anything from her for almost 2 months, and then she just turns up?" "It's okay. Thanks for letting me know." But Annie was already walking through the door. "Just got a partner with her. What is going on?" Jeff turned to face them as Haley said a goodbye and left. "Hi, Annie. It's good to see you." Her face was completely still. Jeff could read absolutely nothing in her body language. "I can't afford to mess this one up. What is she looking for?"
"Excuse me." Annie felt herself freeze slightly as the students dispersed and she stood up to walk into the lecture theater. She watched Jeff's body language change from the easy, confident stance he'd adopted in front of his students to something wary and defensive as he greeted her. "Why isn't he happy to see me? I didn't mean this to be how we got into contact again, but..." "This isn't a social call, Jeff," she said. "We're here on official business." A hurt expression passed over his face. Oh, sorry. "Why did I say that? Just because he didn't run towards me with tears of gratitude because I finally broke a 2-month-long silence?"
"Do I need to call a lawyer, Annie?" he said in a carefully emotionless tone of voice. I thought I had noticed this with some surprise the rising tension between them. "That won't be necessary, Jeff," he said, directing a "Don't notice." Annie looked at his partner. "We believe you may be able to help us with some background on somebody who may be a person of interest in an ongoing investigation. That's all." "Let's do this in my office," Jeff said. "You'll have more privacy there."
Jeff led them down a hallway and up a flight of stairs to a comfortable, well-appointed office with a view out over the driving range. "You've done well for yourself, Jeff," Annie thought as she looked at the stylish desk, the wall of law books and journals, and the coffee table with two small sofas on either side of it, doubtless for more informal occasions. He gestured for his visitors to sit on one of the sofas and took the other one for himself.
"Well, why do I owe this pleasure?" he said. His body language was still guarded, defensive.
Annie felt something shrivel inside. "I hate seeing you like this. I hate knowing it might be my fault. Do you know this woman?" She passed the picture over to him.
"Of course I do. We got that picture from my Facebook account."
"Don't be a lawyer with me, Jeff, please. What can you tell us about her?"
"Is that really all I am to you now, Annie? A source?" "That's Natalia, Mark's girlfriend."
"I missed you so much. Why are you treating me like a stranger? How well do you know her?"
"Would he have ever spoken to me again if it hadn't been? We shared a house for a week. We went to a couple of parties with Mark, and I took her out to dinner once when he was busy. But you notice if you've been following my Facebook page. We'd like to hear your impressions of her, Adao. We couldn't believe the tension between them had intervened. Jeff seemed to relax slightly at the intervention of the other agent and began to talk more freely about how Natalia liked to cultivate the image of a dumb model speaking with a heavy Russian accent. Pretending not to understand much English, wandering around the house and garden in a bikini, or even less. And he shifted uncomfortably at that, especially as Jeff smiled slightly at the memory, and watching reality TV. Jeff also mentioned, however, that in private she spoke flawless English with barely an accent, watched C-SPAN, read the Washington Post and Wall Street Journal, and was perfectly capable of holding an extended conversation with a law professor over the cases likely to come before the Supreme Court and what the consequences of them would be.
When they asked him if he knew who else she had talked to and got a blunt answer, pretty much every influential middle-aged guy in D.C. who had attended one of Mark's lobbying functions and who was sufficiently straight to notice a hot blonde. They looked at each other with a sudden concern. A final round of questions followed and a request for Jeff to copy all the pictures he'd taken of Natalia.
All of them? Are you sure?
Yes, Jeff. All of them.
I'll then say I didn't warn you.
And a final warning about keeping their visit confidential. You must not tell anybody about this visit, especially Mark.
And they were ready to leave. Adele couldn't help but notice the way Eddie wouldn't look Jeff in the eye as she said goodbye and showed herself out. And Jeff couldn't take his eyes off her, with a heartbroken expression on his face as she left. Annie, can I borrow your phone, please? He asked as they headed out of the building and across the court. Mine's almost dead, and I'd like to let Harpy know that I'm going to be back tomorrow.
Annie was still miles away. Sorry? She said before snapping back. Oh, of course, she said as she pulled out her phone and passed it over. Natal typed something out, then closed the phone down and handed it back. Annie had barely put it back in her purse before she felt it vibrate. So she took it out again and looked at the message.
Jeff, of course, I'll be there. Thanks.
What the? Annie thought as she frantically scrolled back up. Me. I'm sorry things were so weird back then. Can we meet up tonight and talk privately and off duty? We're staying at the Riverside Travel Lodge and I'll be free from 7:30. Natal? What the hell? She turned and hissed at her partner, her face going pale with rage.
I didn't back down. Need to talk to that guy, Annie. And not like you did just now. You weren't going to do it yourself, so I helped you.
That's way out of line. You had no right.
Can it, Annie? She squeaked in shock as he continued speaking. The party ended the way it did because everybody who was there, including Paul, could see you were there with the wrong guy. Everybody except you and Jeff, it seems. You guys need to talk, get on the same page, and take a chance with each other. Don't spend your life being miserable because that's safer than trying to be happy. You spent 2 months not talking and it's killing you. You can't keep working 18 hours a day just to distract yourself.
Annie's rage collapsed. I'm afraid, Atal. We've danced around this thing for so long. I don't think either of us knows how to stop anymore. Uh-oh. Right? Oh, okay. Sorry.
A life lived in fear is a life half-lived, Annie.
More chic wisdom, Atal? And Annie said dryly.
He grinned at her. That's from Strictly Ballroom, the greatest Australian ballroom dance movie of the 90s.
Is that an actual genre then? Annie muttered, but Atal had continued talking. Oh great, hold on. Ryan? 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 Uh-oh. All right, cutting this part out. Wait, that's not the right melody, is it? Welcome back. I hope. Right. Ryan. Ryan. Ryan? Oh. Ha, knew that. Right?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay. Oof. The audience has missed you. yeah. Where were we? I can't remember. The try and live life, right?
Yeah, try and live life. So I just carry on from there?
Yep.
Try and live life through the full 4 months. Go out to dinner tonight, have a few drinks, talk and try not to be complicated. Act, sleep with the guy if you want, and you speak again.
Yeah.
Or not. That's the case, maybe. I thought I was smart again.
Annie tried to deflect one last time. I can't. I've got to write up the interview notes. And...
her partner wasn't having it. I'll write up the notes and email them to the rest of the task force. You're going to relax and have a good time.
Yes, Tatal, she sighed, but also smiled a little. Jeff had come back to the... Go ahead.
Never come back to his apartment after finishing for the day. Showered, changed, smart casual, but no designer labels, nothing that screamed trying too hard, and left again, pulling into the motel car park with a minute to spare. He went into the lobby and saw Annie was already there. She didn't change out of her FBI uniform, knee-length black skirt, black jacket, white button true blouse, and medium heels. But she was still the only thing in the room Jeff could focus on. As he walked over, she stood up and faced him.
They hesitated for a moment in nervous silence.
I'm sorry, Jeff blurted out.
I'm sorry, Annie said simultaneously. Jeff smiled slightly at the confusion.
Youth before beauty, he said. Annie rolled her eyes at him.
Can we go somewhere else and talk on the way?
Of course. How does Morty's Steakhouse sound?
Like a good idea for someone who hasn't had a proper meal since yesterday. She smiled slightly at him.
Jeff bowed a fraction and indicated she could start walking.
I really am sorry, Jeff, she said as they left the building and walked across the car. I promised to speak to you, and I meant it, but it was so hard to say what I wanted to say, and work was so busy that it was easy to put it off, she went silent for a moment.
I said you could have as much time as you needed, Annie, and I meant it. In truth, Jeff could barely restrain the urge to take Annie by the shoulders and shake her until everything came, but he suspected that might prove counterproductive.
Annie looked up at him with a slight smile. Thanks, Jeff. Oh, nice car. They'd reached the Jaguar.
Thanks, he said. Rita calls it my midlife crisis taking physical form.
Wouldn't it need to be a convertible for that?
Jeff raised up suddenly. This is what I've missed. Thanks, Annie. You understand.
They climbed into the car and Jeff pulled out of the car park. Annie went serious before she spoke again. What were you going to apologize for, Jeff?
Jeff went silent for a moment as he concentrated on maneuvering the car through a junction. Everything, he said at last.
I don't understand. Annie's brow furrowed.
You were in a good place before we met again, he said. You were in a relationship with somebody you love. You are happy. You have a future ahead. Then I came along and blew.
It's not your fault, Jeff, Annie interrupted. I didn't really love Paul. I liked him, and I liked the fact that he seemed to love me. I think we were together because I was in love with being loved, not because I was in love. All you did was make me realize the difference earlier than would otherwise have been the case.
Did she just say? Jeff found himself thinking with a shock surprise. Annie seemed to realize she'd said more than she intended as well, for she changed the direction of the conversation.
Jeff, I need to ask you a favor. Can we not talk about anything serious tonight?
You started it. I'm not sure I understand what you mean, Annie.
Remember the girl with flowers in her hair, Jeff?
As if I could ever forget. Of course.
You said I looked tired and stressed out and needed to be carefree, even if just for an afternoon. I'm even more tired and stressed now. Work is reaching a crisis point in my private life. She hesitated for a moment. The thing is, can I be that girl again for an evening? Can we just relax, have fun, pretend it's just the two of us? I've got a bunch of vacation days I need to use. I promise as soon as this case is over, I'll take a couple of weeks and come back to Greendale, and we can have that serious conversation I promised you. But tonight, can we just do stupid stuff, like in the old days?
Jeff looked sideways for a moment before returning his concentration on the road. I see the turning for Molly's car park. She looks tired, depressed, beaten. If that's what it takes to get my Annie back, I'll wait. Your wish is my command, he said instead, as the car came to a halt. Annie's face melted into one of her soft smiles. She remained seated as Jeff got out, walked around the car and opened the door. When he reached a hand in to help her out, she took it and did not let go as she stood up and they started to walk into the restaurant. So, no off-duty dress today? Jeff asked.
We went to the airport straight from the office. I didn't have time to go home and pack. I had to buy a toothbrush and a change of underwear at the airport.
When you said you wanted a funny evening, did you mean the sort of fun where underwear shopping would become relevant?
Jeff? Annie replied with a shocked gasp as she bumped him with her shoulder. He grinned and responded by throwing an arm across her shoulders. She looked up at him in surprise, then passed an arm around his waist rather than pull away. Thus entwined, they walked into the restaurant. The drive back had been mostly silent, the warm, comfortable sort of silence that lies between two people who know each other deeply and are drawn together by that knowledge rather than driven apart. Once again, Jeff parked and walked around the car. Once again, Annie took his hand and didn't let go after she got out of the car. Thanks, Jeff. I really need it tonight. She smiled up at him.
It was a pleasure, Annie. He smiled back. It's always a pleasure. And besides, here he chuckled softly. Given how close I came to going out with Adele, I'm really pleased it was you in the end. And he had told Jeff the truth about the phone call, afraid he would be angry, only for him to laugh softly and propose a toast to real friends.
They had reached the front door. Annie turned so she was facing Jeff. Neither of them seemed willing to be the first to say the words that would bring the evening to the end. To an end.
What are you thinking? He said instead.
I'm thinking Atal said I should sleep with you. That's what I needed. But I have to be on the way to the airport before dawn. And I never want to be just another girl you sleep with who disappears before sunrise. If we do it, I want it to be the first day of the rest of our lives. I'm thinking if you were to kiss me now, this time, I wouldn't run away, she said instead.
Jeff smiled, the special soft smile only Annie ever saw, and reached one hand up to caress the back of her head, while the other took hold of one of Annie's hands. He tilted the back slightly and her eyes opened wide as she looked into his, and their lips met. This time the kiss was soft and unhurried, and full of warmth and feelings, but no frenzied passion. Hey, he said as it came to an end.
Hey, she said. They both had soft smiles on their faces. I really do have to get a very early flight tomorrow. She said apologetically. But I will be back soon. I promise.
I know you will. Goodbye, Annie. And see you soon. They moved apart.
Goodbye, Jeff. She turned and walked through the hotel door. As she disappeared inside, she turned one last time, smiled and waved. Jeff waved back.
I love you, Annie Edison.
And that is where we're ending today.
Hey!
Okay. Woo. Woo! Thanks, you guys.
Thank you, Craig.
Listening in. Wait, what did you say?
Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Jurek.
Oh my god.